Hi, you're listening to another sermon from Deep Creek Anglican Church.
Thanks for having me here tonight, guys, and thanks for inviting me, Nick. I've been catching up with Nick for a while, and it's always good to kind of hear. He often talks about, you know, you guys and how the community's going, what you guys are up to in your meetings and stuff, and it's always super encouraging for me to hear about that, and it's even more encouraging to come along tonight and actually put some faces to the names and be like, oh, these are the amazing young people that Nick loves so much, which is great. So, my name's Chris. I used to be a youth pastor a few years ago at a church in Blackburn. These days I work with young people who are sort of like young people who, I guess, their families can't look after them anymore. And then they just employ youth workers to look out for them. And like, my job is super domestic. Like, we clean the toilet and we make lunch and take kids to school and stuff like that. So it's a bit of a different kind of job, still with youth, but different from the church stuff. But anyways, I'm married to Fiona and we have a cat named Archie. I should have actually prepared like a photo of Archie to put in my slideshow or something, because he's very cute, but I didn't think of it, so next time. But and we live in Box Hill, so we're not too far away, not quite the same neighbourhood, but pretty nearby. Does anyone here live in Box Hill? Anyone live in Box Hill? Where are you guys mostly from? Are you from Doncaster, Unawatting, Ringwood? Any Donvale kind of area? Anyway, okay, that's kind of, yeah, similar-ish, that's good. I was just curious as well about like what year level you guys are in school. So maybe we'll go top down. Anyone year 12? Got one year 12, good work. 11? 10? 9? 8? Year 7? Any grade 6s? Any grade 5s? Just you, cool. Okay, all right, guys. So, look, this is a bit of a heavy passage that we read tonight, and we are going to talk about a little bit of grown up stuff, life and death, and that kind of thing. But you seem pretty smart to me, so you'll probably, you know, I think you can handle it. Should be all right. But before we do that, I just wanted to ask you guys a bit of a question. So, let's see if we can get this slide thing working. Wait a second. How do I do this? Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes. Beautiful. All right. So this is the topic, Bible Alone. I believe we've been doing similar kind of titles so far. What were the other ones, Nick? Grace Alone and Faith Alone. Okay, so tonight we're talking about the Bible Alone, just that, nothing else. Now, here's a question for you guys. So I want you to actually chat with the person next to you about this. So who do you follow? And I'm talking about like social media. So things like, who do you follow on Instagram, TikTok, whatever it is? I don't know what the kids are doing these days. I'm old. Or maybe you have like a YouTuber that you follow or something like that, or podcasts, or maybe there's like a website that you go on that has lots of articles that you like to read, like top 10 tips to, you know, beat the Ender Dragon in Minecraft. I don't know what it is, but have a chat with the person next to you. Who do you follow? What do they do? What are they known for? And why do you follow that particular thing online? Okay. And then I'm going to get some people to share back. All right. So have a chat for a minute, and we'll bring it back in. I'm hearing Mr. Beast. That's good. He's in my slides later, so that's helpful. Alrighty. I think we're going to bring it in. Does anyone want to volunteer somebody that they follow? Anyone like Keen Bean want to tell us, who do you follow online? Otherwise, I'm just going to pick on people and be like, you. Nick, who do you follow?
I follow lots of people. I follow this guy called Little Z. I was hoping for some cheers. No one. It's okay. He's a game YouTuber. He plays Smash Bros. A lot.
Yeah. Nice. All right. You spoke before, so I'm going to pick on you. Daniel?
I follow rappers and it's maybe Ninja.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. Nice. Any of the ladies want to share?
Mostly just like gaming YouTubers, DantyDM and such.
Yeah, okay, yeah, gaming YouTubers and stuff makes sense. Wait, I saw a hand here somewhere.
Mr. Beast!
Mr. Beast, yeah.
I like watching music videos.
Music videos, yeah, nice. Which who's like your favourite music artist? Don't know? No, that's fine. I'll ask you again at the end and you'll have an answer then. No. All right. So, oh, one more? All right, let's do it.
Sideman.
Who is Sideman and why do you follow him?
Sideman.
10.
What does this mean? Educate me, I'm old man.
KSI and
Logan Paul.
Oh,
no.
What are they? Who are these people? What do they do?
KSI's group. Do you know KSI's? Oh, fair enough.
Okay, I don't know these people. So you can tell I'm about 20 years older than you. So there you go. I need to do a lot of Googling after this to try and get up to speed, and I'll probably still be out of date. All right. I want to tell you, I think there's a few reasons why we often follow people online. All right. And this is my summary. So my take. Oh, wait, we're missing a slide. Oh, that's no good. Well, I'm just going to tell you anyway. So I think the first thing is, people we follow online usually are powerful in some way. And so by that, I mean there's something about them that kind of draws us to them. So maybe they're really funny. Maybe they're really intelligent. Maybe they're really creative. Or they've got a really like zany, you know, way of viewing the world. There's something, or maybe they're really attractive, or they're really fit, or whatever it is. There's something about them that we find impressive that's kind of powerful. Okay. And that's why they have so many people following them. I think another reason that we follow people is because they're reliable. A lot of the time, you know someone like Mr. Beast, he's always going to provide quality, consistent content. You know, it's always going to be good. You know, you go back to the same sources because you know they're reliable. They're going to keep producing the same kind of stuff. I think another one is sometimes they have useful advice. So if you're like watching a gaming thing, it's like maybe you're just watching a stream and it's kind of funny. But also sometimes you might be like, oh, I need a walkthrough. What am I going to do? How do I do this next stage? You get stuck in your game or something. You want some tips. You're always getting killed in COD and you're like, ah, why is this person always destroying me? And another thing is they're entertaining, right? So it's just like they're just fun and entertaining to listen to. But how does the Bible compare? I think a lot of the time we don't really think of the Bible as being these things, being powerful, reliable, being useful, being entertaining. I reckon a lot of the time we think of the Bible as being kind of more like irrelevant, old-fashioned. It's pretty hard to understand. It can be hard to get your head around, especially, you know, we're reading all these names and it's like these are names of people who lived thousands of years ago in a different culture, and it's really hard for us to imagine what their lives would have been like today. But I'm going to make the argument that the Bible is worth reading. Okay, and now, I don't know if you caught it from that story. This is a story about the one time that they lost the Bible. So you might think, how the heck did they lose the Bible? We've all got Bibles. There's one here, you've got one there. But this is in a time when there was like maybe one, maybe two Bibles floating around in the whole world. All right? So imagine if you wanted to read the Bible and there was only one Bible. So you're like, I really want to read the Bible. I really want to read the story of Daniel and be like, what's happening in that story? I'm trying to remember it from Sunday school. Can't recall. But there's only one Bible and it's in Adelaide. All right? So every time you want to read the Bible, you got to go to Adelaide. You go on this really like long, multiple day journey. You get to Adelaide and you're like, all right, I'm here. I'm ready to read the Bible. Where is it? And they're like, oh, I don't know. What's the Bible? Have we... We do have that around somewhere. I think we put it in a, like, it's maybe in the garage somewhere. I'm not really sure. Do you know where we put the Bible? I can't. Look, we'll get back to you. We'll get back to you. You come all the way to this city to read the Bible and it's gone. No one can find it because there's only like one copy. This is what happened. So this is an era where they've forgotten where the heck that one Bible is. And you know what? They're not worried about it. They're not even thinking about it. So what's happening is you've got this guy, Josiah, all right? And he's the king. And you know what? Again, he's also not thinking about the Bible. He's not that interested in it. But he does know they've got this nice temple in the city. And he's like, man, we should really do a bit of a reno on that temple. We got to, you know, renovate it up, make it look nice, put some new stone in, put some new timber. Have any of you guys had your parents or your family renovate a house or just do some repairs on your house? Yeah, so it's like a bit of a process, right? And it costs a lot of money. They're investing a whole lot of resources into this. So they do a renovation of the temple. And you know what? They weren't expecting it, but they found the Bible and they're kind of shocked. All right, so the priest, the high priest, his name's Hilkiah, he finds the Bible. And he's like, what's this? They call it the Book of the Law, all right, because it's mostly, they didn't have as many books as now in the Bible, they just had mostly the laws. And they find the Bible, and the priest is like, oh, this is an interesting book, isn't it? Maybe I should give this to the king. Maybe the king would be interested. He might find it fascinating. So he takes the Bible, he takes it to the prime minister, and the prime minister takes it to the king. Oh, this is so not in order. Where are we? Oh, yeah, there we go. Oh, no, there we go. Yeah, that's good. That's good. All right. Oh, yeah, and the king was quite young. I should say that too. So he was 8 when he became king. And then at this point, he's about 25. All right. And this is, oh, this is the remains of the temple today. So this is like a little piece of what they're trying to fix up a few thousand years ago. And then they get the Bible to the king. I don't know if that's... Click. Click. Hey, okay. They get the Bible to the king. The secretary, the prime minister, takes it to the king and he says this: the priest gave me a book. So he doesn't say, oh, we found the book of the law. We found the Bible. Because the king doesn't know what the Bible is. He's not on his agenda. He's just thinking about, we really need to make this temple a bit nicer. It would be great if it looked better. And the prime minister says, the priest has given me this book. Maybe we should have a read of it. The priest thinks it's important. It might be interesting. And what that tells us is this: they don't know what this book is. They're not aware of it. Again, they weren't looking for it. They happened to find it. I've got this book, a book. There's this book here. How fascinating. Let's give it a go. And the thing that happens next is quite interesting. The secretary reads it to the king. I'm assuming like start to finish, reads the whole thing. And the king, what's his response? He starts to cry. So in verse 11, when the king heard the words of the book of the law, this is a 25-year-old man. He's not an old man. He's a 25-year-old man. He's in the prime of his life. And he starts crying and he tears his robes. So again, this is a bit hard for us to understand. Like, why would you start tearing your robes? In this culture, in this time, if you're tearing your clothes, it means you are really upset about something. You know, you are so upset that you are willing to tear apart your NBA top. You're that stressed about it, all right? You are really upset if you're tearing your clothes in this culture. So the king has heard something in this book that he's not familiar with, that has made him completely just wrecked with grief. He's so upset. He's so unhappy by what he's heard. Have you ever had that reaction to the Bible? You're reading, like when we were hearing it read before, did you just start uncontrollably weeping in your seats? I didn't see anybody do that. I didn't do that. That's not a reaction you would expect. So what is it that this guy's read that makes him so upset? This is the kind of grief where it's like, you know, when it's, you know, it's 40 degrees, it's really hot, and you go to McDonald's and you just want to have a McFlurry, and you get there and you're like, yes, give me a McFlurry. I want double toppings. And they're like, no, I'm sorry, the ice cream machine is broken. You can't have any McFlurry. That's the kind of grief that I'm talking about here. The king is devastated. He's wrecked. Have you guys ever read or watched something online that makes you cry, that makes you upset? My wife will know sometimes I do cry. I watched a movie the other night and I was crying and she was like comforting me, so I can be a bit of a crier. But it's not that common, is it, that we read something or watch something that makes us that intensely emotional that we just can't control it? Have you ever read anything in the Bible that made you cry? My guess is probably not. So what did he read? I'm going to give you a sample. This is one of the things that he might have read. So this is from in what they call the law, the Old Testament. If you don't obey the Lord your God and do not follow his commands and rules I'm giving you today, all these curses will come on you and overtake you. That sounds pretty intense. Curses. I think those are bad. The Lord will drive you and the king set over you to a nation unknown to you or your ancestors. So this is the king. He's reading the book. He's never heard it before. And he reads this passage. The king, that's him. Ah! Okay. The king is going to get kicked out and everyone in the whole country is going to be deported to another country. All right? So they're going to get colonized and attacked by a more powerful nation. Every single person is going to be sent away. Imagine that. Imagine if another country invaded Australia and then every single Australian person was just deported to that other country and we never came back to Australia again. That would be worth crying about, wouldn't it? That is what the king has read. And this is bad news for him. It's talking about the king and he's the king. Bad news for the king. And he's never heard this before. So, in verse 13 it says, go and inquire of the Lord for me. Is that right? No, I'm questioning myself. No, we'll get to that. Oh, no, no. Yeah, that is what we want to read. All right. So, he says, go and inquire of the Lord for me and for the people and for all Judah about what is written in this book. God, great is the Lord's anger that burns against us, because those who have gone before us have not obeyed the words of this book. They have not acted in accordance with all that is written there concerning us. They haven't obeyed the book. The kings realized we haven't been following this book, which makes sense because they didn't even know where it was in order to read it, in order to follow it. All right? And he's upset. And he does something which, you know, we haven't read in this chapter, but basically he goes on and he does something really shocking, which is he changes the whole society. So in the later chapters, he goes through and he goes and he actually shuts down all the other centers of worship in the country. So they have all these other different gods that they're worshiping and he shuts them all down. And he actually goes and he shuts down a lot of like really creepy stuff that was going on in the cities. They have these like different cults that are running. He shuts them down and he actually goes and publicly executes a whole lot of people. So he goes and finds religious leaders and he just executes them. He just has them killed. I mean, he's the king. He can do that. That sounds pretty extreme, right? Like, what would you be so concerned about that you're like, we really need to kill all these people because we're not following the book. We got to kill the people. Does anyone want to have a guess? Like, what is it that the king is so concerned about here? Why is he killing these other leaders? What do you think? Yeah. That's right. Yeah, so there's this thing in the Bible about like you shouldn't be worshipping other religions, you know, you'd be cursed. But and there's a reason, one of the reasons for that is that these other religions, actually, they're really into sacrificing children. They actually burn them to death to try and get attention from their God. So imagine if you're like, I don't know if you've ever been to church and you're like, oh, I really don't want to go to church today. And you go to your mum, you're like, oh, mum, do I really have to go to church? I really just want to stay home and watch Mr. Beast. I want to stay home and just like have a nap. Do I have to go? And your mum's like, why don't you want to go? Like, what's the problem? Church is great. We love church. It's great. There's singing and stuff. And you're just like, yeah, but it's all the child sacrifices. I just don't want to get burnt to death at the stake. You know, I'm really sick of it. That's what was going on. It was like in their religious ceremonies, they'd just be burning children to death. And the king's like, wait a second. I've read the book and the book says this is bad. He needed to read the book to figure that out. Okay. This is a normal thing in their time and culture. And he's like, whoa, this is not good. We shouldn't be burning all these children to death. Maybe we should stop that. But there's a whole lot of religious leaders who are trying to keep that going. And so he decides, I've got to actually kill them. I said this is a heavy story and it is a heavy story. But my point is this, it's powerful. Reading this book, it changes the king and his perspective on life, and then he changes the whole society based off that. He takes drastic action. And the reason he takes drastic action is because, you know, the things that we worship, the things that we love, the things that we follow, they actually affect your whole life, right? So if you really, really love gaming, you're all about gaming, I'm a big gamer, sometimes you can just get consumed by that and every minute of the day you're just thinking about gaming. I don't know if you've ever been in a mode where it's like you love this game you're playing so much, you go to bed and you just be dreaming about the game and then you wake up in the morning and be like, oh, I've got to get on my game, and you're sitting there playing and you're like, oh, I really need to go to the toilet, but I got to keep playing the game. You know, it's like when you worship something, when you love something, you just get obsessed with it, right? If somebody's like a gym junkie and they're just obsessed with fitness, they're just thinking about it all the time. They're like, when can I get to the gym next? When can I go and just do that extra rep? Oh, I'm just watching this new video and like, oh man, that's a new exercise routine. I can do that. Okay, a little bit more heavy. If somebody's addicted to pornography, they're thinking about it a lot of the time. Sometimes people are just really into porn and every minute of the day they're thinking about that. When can I go and find a moment when I'm on my own, when nobody's around, maybe my parents are asleep, and I can look at that. If somebody's obsessed with reputation, with what other people think of them, they're probably thinking about that all the time. If I do this, what are those people going to think about me? Are they going to judge me? Maybe what can I do that will make other people like me or make people pay attention to me? The things that we worship, the things we're obsessed with, those things, we actually affect our whole lives and we think about them constantly. Josiah the king has realized there's something that the people are worshipping in this culture that's not right, and it's consuming them. It's becoming their whole world. And so he needs to take a drastic action. And I guess what I'm saying here is the Bible in this situation is powerful. It changes him and it actually changes the whole society. So I want to say today, a little bit more lighthearted, the Bible is more powerful than Dwayne Johnson, and here's some little home Photoshop that you can enjoy. It's more powerful than Dwayne Johnson. The Bible and the words of God are more powerful than anything else or anyone else that you can follow. I remember when I was a teenager, when I was about, I reckon I was probably 13 or 14, so we're talking, you know, 100 years ago, I was reading the Bible and I was reading this bit where Jesus talks about love. I don't know if you know this, but Jesus talks about, he says at one point, the whole, like my, he says, my summary of what the whole of the Bible is about is just love. Love God, love your neighbor. And I read that and it really changed my worldview. It transformed me in that moment. I was like, whoa, wait a second. He's saying everything in life is about love. Why did nobody tell me this before? And then I just started thinking all the time, man, I really need to be thinking about how can I love every day? And even now, almost every single day, I'm thinking about and praying about this. There's something about that teaching that changed me. It was powerful in my life and it had an ongoing effect. My dad knows a guy who became a Christian. And this guy became a Christian because he read like just one teaching of Jesus that really changed his perspective. Can anyone guess what that was? It's a bit of an obscure one. I'll read it for you. He just read this and he was like, whoa, that's amazing. This is it, Matthew 5, 28. Anyone who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Does that seem really compelling to you? Maybe not. But for this guy, he was like, whoa, Jesus really understands life. Man, I've got to become a Christian. This teaching is amazing. The Bible is powerful. Somebody that I kind of look up to, in a way I follow, is this lady, Dorothy Day. You can see it's a very old-timey photograph. She lived about 100 years ago. And she, when she was a little kid, she was like a little small child, like I'm talking about 5 years old, she read the Bible. And this is like her talking as an adult about her experience as a five-year-old. Slowly as I read, a new personality impressed itself on me. I was being introduced to someone and I knew almost immediately that I was discovering God. And this woman, Dorothy, she went on and she started this movement called the Catholic Workers Movement, which is a Christian movement. And they basically started doing like social work and caring for people that were poor or had a hard time, which is something I'm very passionate about. And this movement grew. And these days, there's like 250 communities that spawned out of her basically following Jesus of what she read in the Bible. The Bible was powerful for her. And then her transformation, same as Josiah, her being transformed by it, then has transformed and affected her whole culture, which is the US. Even as a child, she realized that it was powerful. Now, a lot of the time, we might not think that it's powerful. It doesn't seem that powerful, does it? Like when we're reading that story again, you didn't burst into tears. There was nothing probably that you sat there and thought, whoa, that's amazing. Oh, he went and spoke to the prophet. There's nothing that convicts us a lot of the time. But I want to suggest to you that it depends how you read it. A lot of the time when we read the Bible, we're reading it like it's a textbook. You know, when you go to school, I don't know if you guys do this anymore, but we used to have like school textbooks and they just get somebody to read a whole passage out of the textbook in class and you would just be bored to death. You'd be pretty much falling asleep and you'd have no idea at the end of it what was said. If the teacher asks you, oh, what was that? What was the content? You'd just be, I don't know, I don't remember. That is a lot of the time how we read the Bible. It's just like a list of facts that somebody somewhere wants us to know and we're really just not interested. I want to tell you that we should be reading the Bible actually like a love letter. So I don't know if you guys have ever received or sent a love letter. Maybe in this day and age, it's just like a really long love DM to your crush or something. I don't know. But love letters, they can be powerful. When you receive a love letter, it is like the most flattering thing ever. I'm just going to embarrass my wife and say she has written me a love letter before. And I was like, oh, this is so cute, so sweet. When you receive a letter like that, it's written to you personally. And you're affected. You're like, wow, I can't believe someone thinks this about me. They love me so much. That is what we're supposed to be actually doing when we read the Bible. We're not supposed to be reading and be like, oh, this textbook, oh, it's so dry. We're supposed to be listening on the edge of our seats and be like, whoa, what is this amazing story? There's a personal message here for me. God is trying to say something to me personally. He cares about me. That is actually what God's trying to communicate in every single page, every single story. So I guess what I'm saying is, if you don't feel it's powerful, part of the reason might be that we got the wrong lens going in. We got the wrong way of thinking about it going in. It's a love letter. It's not a textbook. It's personal and it's powerful. All right, this is where Mr. Beast comes in, I hope. The Bible is more reliable than Mr. Beast. There we go again. Again, I think he's a good example of like someone who has very reliable content. That's why so many people follow him. They know it's interesting. He's got a good positive vibe. He's always on his game. But the Bible is more reliable, more consistent than anything else or anyone else that you could follow. But the King Josiah, he's read this book and he's really impacted by it. But he wants to know, he's like, is it reliable? Can I trust this? And so he says this, go and inquire of the Lord for me and for the people and for all of Judah about what is written in the book that has been found. So he's read this, he's kind of shocked, he's never read it before, he hasn't heard of it, but he's like, is this right? Am I hearing right? Is this reliable? Like, am I hearing what I think that I'm hearing? And so he sends his best people to go and talk to a prophet. A prophet is somebody who just like speaks directly from God, basically. And the prophet is this woman called, what is her name? Huldah, there we go. And all of these men know that Huldah has the good word. She's got the direct line to God and she's going to know what's up. So they go to Huldah, the prophet, and she says this is what the Lord says. I'm going to bring disaster on this place and its people according to everything written in the book that the king of Judah has read. Because they've forsaken me and burned incense to other gods. They've aroused my anger by all the idols that their hands have made. My anger will burn against this place and not be quenched. Now that's a heavy word. But it's confirming what the king has read. He's read this passage saying like, if we don't follow the book, then bad things are going to happen to our society. And then they go and they consult the prophet Huldah and she says, yep, the book's right. It's reliable. Bad things are going to happen. So it's confirmed, but it's kind of bad news, right, for the people. This is probably, I mean, maybe the king's hoping like, I hope it's not reliable because if it is, then we're stuffed. We're in a lot of trouble. Basically, you know, Christians believe with the Bible that God is at work, well, was at work as it was being written. So we don't believe like when people say the Bible is the word of God, they don't mean that God sat down with like a pen and paper and he just wrote down some stuff and handed it to someone. There you go. There's my words. It's not that kind of word. It's like that actually God's kind of working, inspiring and helping people to write what's in the Bible. And then it's like, it's that kind of word of God. It's like something that he's orchestrating or organizing or influencing, right? And that's pretty much the reason why for, you know, 2,000 years or more, Christians have believed that the Bible is reliable, that it actually does reflect what God thinks and has to say about life. Even though the king has had this amazing revelation, he's had it confirmed from the prophet Huldah. After this, he has kind of a good life. But the next thing that happens is all the other kings just go back to their old business. They're like, yeah, man, we really miss those child sacrifices. Let's bring them back. Let's get it going again. And they just all start doing really evil stuff again. And eventually these words that the prophet has said and that the king's read in the book do come true. The land is invaded. The people get taken away to a foreign place and a lot of them never return. And one of those people is Daniel, the story of Daniel that happens in that time when the people have been removed because of these kind of circumstances they're talking about. So like we often know the book of Daniel, but we don't know where why it happened. And this is why it happened basically, is they were worshipping other gods. They'd forgotten the book. They'd forgotten the word of God. It's worth listening to. All right, this is my last celebrity analogy. Has more useful advice than Selena Gomez. There we go. The Bible has more useful advice than anyone or anything else that you can follow. And the reason for that is that God knows how life is, right? He created life. He created people. He created you. He created me. So he actually knows how we work. He's an expert. All right. Now imagine for a second that you had cancer. Okay, imagine you're really sick, right? And you're like, man, I really need to solve this cancer issue. Like, I'm very worried. I'm in danger. I'm sick, right? And well, what are you going to do? Are you going to go and, you know, surely you'd go and talk to a doctor, wouldn't you? You'd be like, I've got to find a specialist, someone who knows about this, and they can help me. But imagine instead that you just went on social media, on like Instagram or Facebook or Twitter or X or whatever they call it now. And you were just like, hey, everyone, how do I cure my cancer? I don't want to go see a doctor. What are your tips? And then someone's like, man, you really need to move away from that 5G tower. That's dangerous. And you're like, okay, cool, noted. Move away from the 5G tower. You really just got to, you know, snort some essential oils, get the lavender oil, cancer will be sorted. All good, right? And then that you went away and did it. What's going to happen? Is your cancer going to be cured or not? It's not. You're going to be in trouble. So we know, most of us know, that if you have a problem, you got to speak to an expert about the problem. But God is an expert on life. Because he created life. He created the world. He's like an expert. He knows everything about, like, why do we live? What are we here for? Who are humans? Who are you? Who am I? He created us. So he knows us. And he's an expert on us, actually. And in this story, this community, this culture has been ignoring God's advice. So again, verse 13 from chapter 22. Where is it? He says, great is the Lord's anger that burns against us because those who have gone before us have not obeyed the words of this book. They haven't acted in accordance with what is written. So they haven't been taking God's advice. Now, the thing is, if you don't take advice that's good advice, you end up learning the hard way, don't you? If you're sick, you don't listen to your doctor, you're going to get more sick. And eventually, that's what happens in this culture. They stop taking God's advice, they stop listening, and eventually they learn the hard way, which is that basically everything falls apart and their whole society is actually destroyed, which is a pretty scary thought. They learn the hard way. And it's the same with us. If we ignore God's advice, we're going to learn the hard way. So I read this like clickbait article recently. Oh, wait a second. This is definitely... Oh, here we go. Okay. Yeah, these are slightly out of order, but we'll get there. All right. Stupid TikTok challenges you shouldn't try. All right. So I don't know if you guys have heard of any of these, but they're, you know how they have these TikTok challenges and then some of them are just like insane, like really bad. You just should not do this. Like, I remember once at a youth camp, a friend of mine was running. They did this like cinnamon challenge where they tried to like eat as much cinnamon as they could. And one of the kids inhaled all the cinnamon and they actually had to call an ambulance because they were choking on cinnamon powder. All right. But here are some that I've read about online recently from TikTok. And this is quite scary, actually, because these all involve really serious accidents or death. The Benadryl, which is cold medicine challenge, involves taking as much medicine as you can and posting the footage on TikTok. It resulted in the death of a 15-year-old girl and a 13-year-old boy in the US. The Blackout Challenge. Participants are dared to choke themselves until they pass out for several seconds. What could go wrong? A 10-year-old girl in Italy died. Or actually, she became brain dead after she tied a belt around her neck and strangled herself. She was rushed to hospital, but it was too late. So her body still functioned, but she had no brain activity. She couldn't think. She'd basically just be a vegetable for her life. Here's another one. The Blowtorch Challenge. A teenager in the US used a spray can, like a can of spray paint, and a lighter to make a blowtorch. The can exploded. Him and his friends were covered in flames. He tried to jump into the river nearby to alleviate the burns, but his skin was horribly charred. He's now in for a 6-month hospital stay. Even if you have surgery, like they cut a piece of something off you, they might keep you in there for a day. This guy's in there for 6 months. That is a long hospital stay. So here's the thing, right? What I'm saying is who we follow matters. The advice that we take matters. If we take good advice, it can be amazing. If we have bad advice that we're listening to, it can be catastrophic. And this is confirmed again by the prophet. She says, tell the king who sent you to inquire of the Lord. This is what the Lord, the God of Israel says concerning the words you heard. Because your heart was responsive and you humbled yourself before the Lord when you heard what I spoken about this place and its people, that they would become a curse and would be laid waste because you tore your robes and you wept. I also heard you, declared the Lord. Therefore, I will gather you to your ancestors. You'll be buried in peace. Your eyes will not see all the disaster I'm going to bring on this place. And they took her answers back to the king. So Josiah has heard the advice and he's taken it. All right. And basically what happens is the crisis, it does happen, but it's slowed down. So it happens after he's lived his life and he's died like an old man. He has a peaceful life. And it's later on when they stop following advice again that the bad stuff happens. So he takes the advice and it works. Now, last thing I want to just talk about is just a few things, a few kind of reasons I think that maybe we don't view the Bible this way. We don't think of the Bible as being powerful, as being reliable, as being being useful. So here's one thing that you might say, or some people might say. Let's see. Oh, wait. Oh, here we go. I like some of it, but not all of it. There's some pretty scary bits in there. There's some things that I don't like, or I don't really agree with. Now, I understand we can say that about a lot of things in the Bible, and everyone is entitled to their opinion. But my point is this. The things that God has to say are matters of life and death. They're not just matters of preference. You can choose to ignore it or to disregard some of it, but there's going to be a consequence to that in your life, either immediately or in the long term. God's advice is life or death, and you see that in this story. Here's a little quote. It's a bit heavy, but I like it. This is one of somebody that I follow. Tozer. He's an old author. The word of God, well understood and religiously obeyed, is the shortest route to spiritual perfection, and we must not select a few favorite passages to the exclusion of others. Nothing less than a whole Bible can make a whole Christian. So that's pretty wordy, but I just want to repeat the last bit. Nothing less than a whole Bible can make a whole Christian. Do we pay attention to the whole Bible or just the bits that we like? And now another one. You might be feeling this now after I've been talking for half an hour. It's so boring. I'm bored. Now, I'm sure you're sick of hearing this from your parents, but sometimes, shock, boring things do actually have benefits, all right? So sometimes I go to the gym. I want to tell you it's really boring going to the gym, but it has a benefit, which is that I'm not as unfit as I would have been if I didn't go to the gym. All right. Again, school can be really boring, but you know what? I spend a lot of time with a lot of young people who don't go to school, and it causes a lot of problems in their life. Basically means they can't work. They actually often have a lot of trouble understanding money, so they often have no money. Creates a lot of issues. Sometimes boring things are worthwhile. Another one that's worthwhile that can be a bit boring sometimes is actually listening to other people, like listening to your friends. Sometimes your friends might just be like going on and on and on about their day and you're like, oh, this is so boring, I don't want to listen to this. But if you listen to people, you listen to your friends and the people that are close to you, then you have strong relationships and actually things work a lot better. So I guess I'm just saying the fact that it's boring doesn't really affect the fact of whether it's important. But I also want to say, maybe you just started reading at the wrong place. So if you're really not sure where to start, chat to Nick, chat to somebody else at church and be like, where do I start with this whole Bible thing? But I want to remind you, it's not a textbook, it's a love letter. Read it like a love letter or a love DM, if you will. All right. And this is my last one. Sometimes, I think a lot of people in our society have this, you do you, you just live your best life. Don't worry about what the Bible says. Don't worry about what anybody else says. You just do what you want to do. You do your life. I do my life. We've all got our lives. We've got our different views. But the problem with that is, I think, everyone that I know is really confused about what their best life is. All these people that I know who are trying to live their best life and end up making huge mistakes in their life. A lot of my friends are just going gung-ho and they're like, yes, this is my best life. And it just creates all these problems. There's so many people in our culture, and I've been one of them at times, who are like just anxious and depressed and confused about what is life about? What is the point of life? How do I do me? What does it mean to do me? I don't know who I am. How do I live my best life if I don't know what the best life is? So what I'm trying to say here is God actually, again, if he's a life expert, he knows who we are. He knows who you are. I'm just going to do me. Well, it's like, well, God knows who you are. And if you're thinking, well, you know, oh, I want to live my best life. God actually does know what your best life is. He knows better than us. So I believe that the Bible is more powerful, more reliable, and more useful than anything else or anyone else. But I guess what I want to leave you with is this. How much time and attention do we give to following the things that we follow online, whether it's like videos, YouTubers, content, whatever? And how much time do we spend following, trying to pay attention to the words of God? Like, I thought it was so encouraging what Daniel was saying before, that he reads the Bible. It's something he does with his time. But it's easy to forget that. It's easy to forget that the Bible is powerful. It actually will have huge effects on your life for good if you pay attention to it. How much time and attention do we give to God's content? Probably not enough. All right, we've all been sitting here for way too long. So it's time for us to get up and move a little bit. So you guys can see there is some like pieces of paper here and some texters and stuff. So I want to do a bit of an activity where basically we can get up, you can take a minute to chat or to like reflect for a sec. And I want to invite you guys, you don't have to do it, it's not a compulsory activity or anything like that. But for people that want to think of something from the Bible that for you has been transformative, whether it's like a teaching, something you've read, or maybe it's a story. Like maybe you want to write down like, oh, the story of Daniel. You know, that time Daniel was in the fire. That was, you know, like his friends were in the fire. He wasn't in the fire. He was in the lion's den. But, you know, it's like just a story, or you might write a whole book. You might be, oh, I love the book of Mark. Or you might have a quote or just a Bible verse. So, do you guys reckon we could do that? Just take a minute, think, and then write down something. And the idea is we can write those things down and then see what other people have written and be kind of encouraged and inspired by that. Does that make sense? It's not a test. I'm not going to be going around and be like, oh, they wrote the wrong thing. That's no good. Nick's not going to take this and report it to anybody and be like, oh, the kids don't know the Bible. That's not the point of this activity. It's actually for us to think about what has been powerful to us from what we've read in the Bible and to see what has affected other people as well. All right, I reckon maybe we can like get some background music or something going, Nick, and we'll just take a minute. So you guys can, again, you can take a sec to chat with the person next to you about that, have a think, and then when you feel ready, I just want to invite you to write something down.